Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 872. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about towers and Templars and the Battle of Tours, cartoons and castles and cognac, as we go to the Charente region of France. This is Chris Christensen from Amateur Traveler. Let's talk about the Charente. I'd like to welcome to the show Kylie Lang from lifeinruralfrance.com, who's come to talk to us about the Charente region of France. Kylie, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me. Bonjour.
And Kylie, you are coming to us from France, because that is the name of the website, Life in Rural France. I'm not sure that everyone can find the Charente. Where is it and why are we talking about it?
Okay, so the Charente, you should know, is in southwest France, and it's part of a region called the Poitou Charente, which has four different regions within it. So you've got the Deux-Sèvres, the Charente Maritime, and the Vienne. And in 2013, France in their wisdom, or the French government in their wisdom, decided that they were going to combine 13 different regions, get rid of the old name, and call it Nouvelle Aquitaine. To give you an idea of roughly where that region is, if you think about Bordeaux, we are right near Bordeaux, and cognac is in the Charente. Sunflowers, southwest region, not far from Bordeaux.
Excellent. And why should someone go to the Charente?
Oh, where do I begin? Okay. I am slightly biased because I do live here, but let me paint a little picture for you. The Charente is known for its sunflowers. In the months of the last couple of weeks in July, all the way through August, everywhere you look is just fields and fields of sunflowers. It is absolutely breathtaking. But there's so much more to the Charente than just sunflowers. We have a lot of fairy tale chateaux in this region. So if you like history in any way, shape or form, and I know a lot of Americans love history because obviously I'm from Britain. So I come from a place where history is just inbred into us. And it's pretty much similar with France. And there's a big crossover between France and England when it comes to history as well. But we also have vineyards. We have cognac. We have oysters. We have unbelievable daily markets with fresh produce that happens pretty much every day of the week, 365 days a year, probably other than Christmas Day. And we have these storybook villages that almost look like you're walking through a time warp. They haven't changed. If you really let yourself think back, you could almost be in 15th century France. So if that gives you a rough idea of why you would want to come to this region, bread, cheese, wine, brandy. Doesn't really get much better than that. Oh, and oysters.
Excellent. And a little bit of connection here to where you are and England, because this never was part of England, but it was ruled by the same people as England from time to time. That didn't work out, as it turned out.
No. It's quite interesting, actually, because this whole region, the Aquitaine region, belonged to, it was Eleanor of Aquitaine, and I'm particularly passionate about Eleanor of Aquitaine. She was the only person or only woman to have been queen of two countries. She was queen of France when she was married to Louis VII. They had that marriage annulled, and then she became queen of England when she married Henry II. And he was actually Henry of Anjou. So he was French. And when they came across to England, she had and was still the Duchess of Aquitaine. So she had the whole of this region under her rule, which she gave to Richard the Lionheart. And it was actually King John of Magna Carta that ended up losing the whole lot. through really bad management, King John. He married Isabella of Angoulême, and Angoulême is in the region of the Charente. There is this massive tie between England and France. But yeah, this region originally, for about 300 years, was under English rule. And then it all went tits up, as they say. And we like to say the English are taking this part of France back one house at a time. Because this is a very English region. Well, I say English, but English-speaking region. There's a lot of Canadians, Australians, Americans, English, all living here right in the Charente, or the Poitou Charente. So,
excellent. What kind of itinerary are you going to recommend for us?
Okay, so we're going to start off with some of what I would recommend as being the towns that you need to visit in the Poitou Charente. And we're going to start off with a town called Angoulême, which I mentioned just now. So Angoulême's really interesting because it's actually built up on a hill. So it was like a strategic thing. They wanted to be able to look down over the Charente countryside and see their enemy coming from miles off. And its roots go all the way back to Roman times. So you can still get a feel for that when you walk into Angoulême, because it's all cobbled streets, beautifully half-timbered buildings. You've got all the big ramparts that you can still see that go around Angoulême. And the Hôtel de Ville, which was built by Isabella of Angoulême, the one I just mentioned, who was married to King John, that has still got some of the original towers dating back to the 13th century.
When you say the Hôtel de Ville, you're talking about the city hall, not a hotel.
I am impressed you know that, because a lot of people don't know that. But yes, a Hôtel de Ville is essentially the town hall, not a hotel. And nearly every single little village will have a Hôtel de Ville. It's unbelievable. Something you learn about France quite quickly, whether or not you're in rural France or whether you're in one of the bigger cities, is every single village has a church and they have a town hall and they generally will have a school as well. But those two things, the town hall and the church, every single village has one. So yeah, this is quite a large one. And the other thing about Angoulême is it's one of those places that catches your eye, because as you walk around the city, there's huge, great big murals on the walls, because Angoulême is the cartoon capital of Europe.
So say what?
It is the cartoon capital of Europe. And in January, they have the International Comic Festival every single year. And this year, it was the 50th anniversary of that comic cartoon festival. And literally, it is just engulfed in comic book enthusiasts who will come here and basically celebrate everything comic and cartoon. There is even a trail that you can do, and you can get the map from the tourist office. They'll give you a map that points out the main murals that have been commissioned. So there was a big thing in France where they have something called the Nine Arts of Art, basically. And the cartoon side of things, the comic book side of things, is art number nine. And so it's hugely supported throughout France, and they commissioned 30 of them. And then there was extra ones that came in as well. So it's absolutely fascinating. You can see people stopping and looking and going, say, what? What's going on? What's that? Why is that there? And there's some absolutely fascinating ones. There's one in particular is, I'm trying to think of the name of the church that it's next to. I'll have to come back to you on that one. But the actual mural goes all the way down the building, and it depicts a woman and a man in a love story with an aeroplane going over the top. And it's probably the one that is the most poignant, because there is quite a big story behind it and people stopping there, taking photos all the time. But I mean, that is something that Angoulême is famous for, as I say, being the cartoon capital. But it's also all the history that surrounds it. And as I said, it's built on top of a hill. So it's the tale of two cities, because then there is the bottom city beneath that as well. So a bit like Carcassonne, if you've ever heard of Carcassonne. Carcassonne's the same. Carcassonne is built up on the hill where you've got all the ramparts and what have you. And then you've got the Bastide down below. This is very similar. And it runs along the Charente River. So it's absolutely beautiful. But if you were to go in September, a whole other festival happens. You've got the Circuit de Rampart. So what that is, it's a chance for all the classic cars. I think it's usually the third week in September. The classic cars race through the streets of Angoulême. And it's a lot of fun. It's high octane. They shut off the streets to visitors coming in with cars. You can't get in with a car. You can only walk in. And they literally race around the ramparts. Really exciting. And if you get a chance to go, it's a lot of fun. And September is one of those months in the Charente where the weather is absolutely fantastic. September, October, I would say, are probably the best months to go because it's not as crowded. And the weather, we always, nearly always get an Indian summer. So it sits at a really pleasant 25, 26 degrees Celsius, not Fahrenheit. I don't do Fahrenheit, so I'm not quite sure what that is. So Angoulême. Yeah, so that's Angoulême. It's just steeped in history. And if you get a chance to do the comic strip trail, to do a tour of the Hotel de Ville, I've done that tour myself personally, and they do tours in French if you're brave enough. I did mine in French because I'm trying desperately to improve my French. I did quite well. My French teacher was with me, so that was helpful. But they also do it in English as well. And they'll tell you all about how that Hotel de Ville was built, the various different stages that it went through, and they walk you through what is left of some of the original building as well. And fascinatingly enough, that particular building was also used as a prison. I think it was the 15th century that it got used as a prison. And there's still marks on the walls from where prisoners were putting in what you would call today graffiti. But yeah, so that's something else to do. And then you can still walk the ramparts as well, which would be something else that I would highly suggest you do. And the great thing about Angoulême is it's really well positioned. So if you want to explore other regions, you've got a great train station. It's only just under 90 minutes to Bordeaux, which is somewhere else that I would suggest you go for a day trip. Not in the Charente, but is part of the Aquitaine area or the Nouvelle Aquitaine, and definitely worth spending a day in Bordeaux. And Bordeaux is one of those cities that it's just very walkable. Now, it's known as the capital of wine in France for very obvious reasons, because they have lots of different wine fields around there from the Médoc to Saint-Emilion. I think at last count in Saint-Emilion, there was about 300 wineries. So there's a lot of wine going on there. And one of the things I would recommend you do is go to the Cité du Vin. So the Cité du Vin is the city of wine. And it is a fairly modern museum that's only been in existence for a few years now. And the actual building itself is incredible. It's an architectural building that has been designed to look like wine pouring into a wine glass. So it's absolutely fascinating. And it's over 8 floors. Most of the museum is on the 4th floor. I spent 3 hours there and I still could have spent longer. My husband wanted to get to the 8th floor at the top because that's where you got the free glass of wine. So he was very keen to get there. I wanted to spend more time going through the museum. But the good thing about it is it doesn't just talk about wine in the Bordeaux region. It talks about wine from around the world. And they have this super cool thing called the Five Senses Buffet. And you can basically use the five senses to understand how they come across these various different wines, how they make them. You smell the various different things from chocolate to strawberries to all the different things that make up the various different types of wine. Absolutely fascinating. And there's other different things that you can take part in that are interactive. And it is a stunning view from the 8th floor with your free glass of wine. And I would also highly recommend the restaurant on the 7th floor. It's definitely one of those restaurants that is a little heavy on the wallet, shall we say. But, you know, if you're on holiday, France is famed for its food. So it is a gastronomic delight. It was brilliant. Really highly recommend it. And then the other thing I would recommend, because obviously if you're only in France for, let's say, 7 days, you've got 7 days to spend in the Charente. You're only going to really have one day in Bordeaux. So this is why I'm thinking about the things that would be my biggest recommendation. The next thing I would suggest you do, and we did do these both in one day, would be the Bassin de Lumière. So the Bassin de Lumière is a digital art museum. Now, it's way more interesting than it sounds. It's in a submarine base. So this old submarine base with water still in it. Oh, yeah, just trust me on this one. I'm not really into art particularly, but I'm so glad I made the effort to go to this particular museum. So you go in and It's a show that lasts for nearly 90 minutes. And as you go in, the art is projected onto the wall and it reflects into the water. So you're going in and it's more or less pitch black apart from all of this different artwork that's on the wall. And it's all done to music. So it takes you on this journey through the art, the music, the light, the water reflected. And you're lost for words. You don't know what to say. It just takes your breath away. It's absolutely stunning. And there's another room within the Bassin de Lumière where you can go in, lie down on the floor and watch as this 360 degree... Well, I don't even know how to explain it. It just takes you on a journey. It's one of those places that is unusual because of where it is. And it's quick and it's easy to do. We're talking under 90 minutes. But it showcases lots of different arts. You never know what you're going to get and who they're showcasing at any particular time. But all I can say is it is worth the trip. And if you do that, getting a city pass is well worth it as well. So we had a city pass, and that gives you free entry to a lot of the museums and all of the public transport in Bordeaux as well. And it's really not expensive. So if you do end up going for more than 24 hours, I think we got the 48-hour pass and we saved a fortune by having that. So just a little tip there. If you're going for a couple of days, it's well worth getting one of those passes because everything you do with regards to the museums is free. And for things like the Bassin de Lumière and Cité du Vin, you're talking about 22 euros, I think it was, per place each to go in. So it was well worth it. Yeah, that type of thing really is. So that's Bordeaux and that's Angoulême. But we haven't talked about cognac yet. So cognac is really what the Chiron is known for. So Cognac is another beautiful old city that, again, can trace its history back to Roman times as well. And it is filled very similar to Angoulême with its cobbled streets and its half-timbered houses, but it has the biggest cognac houses and distilleries. So we're talking Hennessy. I've done the Hennessy tour. You're talking about Martell, Remy Martin, all of those places. They are all in cognac and they do fantastic tours. The Hennessy tour is the one I've done. Highly recommend it. It's a 3-hour tour. There's several different ones. The one we did was 3 hours and you get to go on the Hennessy boat down the river. And they take you into where all of their barrels are stored. So cognac is interesting because it goes through several different processes, but the aging process takes up to 10 years, dependent on the quality of the cognac that you're producing. And getting to see how this is made, how the barrels are built, how they go from picking the grapes, what they do with them, how it's all fortified, how it's aged, how the barrels come to be, etc., really is worth seeing and understanding. And it can't be called cognac unless it is made within that region. It can only be cognac if it's there. So definitely worth a visit. And a cruise on the Chiron River is absolutely beautiful as well. You go all the way down, you'll see the cognac houses as you're going down the river, and it's a lovely way to spend an hour as well. But one that I would recommend going to is the Chateau Royal de Cognac. So the Chateau Royal, it was originally the residence of some of the French kings in the 15th century. Very grand. So a great place for history buffs, but it is now a distillery. But you can still see some of the old areas within the chateau that were used by the kings. It was originally constructed, if I remember rightly, in 9th or 10th century. So again, really old, but definitely worth visiting. Now, if you go in the summer, they have the Blues Festival as well, which is a lot of fun. And you get big names like Santana, Elton John. Like, there's been some huge names, and they do it every year, usually at the beginning of July. And because it's all outside and open air, which the French love to do, you just get this lovely feel to cognac. And there's just so much going on that it's a great time to go if you're planning a trip around that time.
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. Also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Moving on from cognac, Angoulême and cognac, quite close together. Angoulême is the capital of the Charente. The Charente is known as Department 16. Cognac is about 25 minutes from Angoulême, so not far. And then from cognac, you also make your way into the Charente Maritime. So the Charente Maritime is where all those lovely oysters come from. And it's what that area, the Charente Maritime, is famous for. So in Île d'Oléron, which is one of the islands leading off of La Rochelle, they are famous for their oyster beds and their salt beds as well. So again, it's one of those places that really dates back so far to, I think it's the 9th century, something like that, when the oyster farming started. So lots of history there. And if you like oysters, the French will like to tell you that theirs are the best in the world, specifically the ones in that particular basin. I'm trying to think what the name of them are, and I can't remember. My mind's gone blank. So I'll come back to you on that one. But La Rochelle has a big history because it was a port. Right. It was a very big stronghold for the Knights Templar. Now, I don't know if you've heard
didn't know
of the
that.
Knights.
Okay.
Yes, it was the whole of the Charente, actually. When you look around the Charente, there are lots and lots of different places you can go to find some of the graves and also some of the churches that were part or owned by the Knights Templar. So big Knights Templar area here. But specifically, they use the port at La Rochelle to send their stuff off by ship to the various different places and what have you. So it was a very big stronghold of theirs during that period. And a lot of trade was done through there as well. The maritime trade was huge in La Rochelle. Unlike now, which it's more tourism, the port was a big thing as far as industry was concerned. But you can still go there. The port itself is absolutely beautiful. And you want to make sure that you see the towers. So there's the Tour de la Lenton, there's the Tour de la Chaîne. These are towers that date back years and years. One of them was a prison. You can still look around them. It's something ridiculous, like €3 to visit these towers. And there's always audio that you can listen to as you go around. And the audio is always provided in English as well. So you never need to worry about not being able to speak French. There's always a provision for English. One of the wonderful things about speaking English, so does everybody else, mainly. And then there's a big aquarium in La Rochelle as well, which they have a lot of marine life history in there purely because of the trade and industry that was part of that region. So there's lots to do in La Rochelle, but probably the best thing to do is just sitting at the harbour, watching the world go by. You're on the Atlantic coast, and it's known as the jewel of the Atlantic coast, La Rochelle. It's known as La Ville Blanche, the White City, because there's lots and lots of white buildings that you see there in Île-d'Oléron and Île-de-Ré. So Île-de-Ré and Île-d'Oléron are the two nearby islands, and you can reach them by a bridge that goes over the water from La Rochelle. They're both between 20 and 25 minutes away from La Rochelle, and that's where most of the oyster and salt farming happens.
Back to the oysters, I believe the word you were looking for was Belon oysters? B-E-L-O-N-S?
No, it begins with M.
Oh, okay. M. Then you were looking for the Maronais.
Yes, that's Orléans it. Thank you.
Oysters. Okay.
That's exactly what I was looking for. Yes, those are the oysters. And those are the ones that are farmed on those two islands, specifically in Île-d'Oléron. And the beaches there are absolutely stunning. If you like the water, if you love the idea of the Atlantic coast, La Rochelle, it's a very quite a famous tourist spot. When you speak to a lot of people, Cognac, La Rochelle, they're places people have heard of. These are the bigger places that I would suggest you go to.
Well, and my surprise with La Rochelle when you were saying it, that it was a Templar fortress,
yes,
is you said it was a bastion of, and I expected you to go the Huguenots, because that's where I know it from, is that section of French history that's around the time of the Four Musketeers and Cardinal Richelieu and all of that. Buckingham from England, I think, was stabbed in La Rochelle, if I remember correctly, or at least he was in the movie version of the Four Musketeers. I don't know if that was where he was in real life.
No, you're,
I
mean, it was a big portion of place.
Yeah, that portion of history.
It really did. And you're right. The Huguenots, it was a big hideout for the Huguenots. They actually felt quite safe
there. The French Protestants.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was, obviously, the wars of religion. They went on for 100 years. It went backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards. But La Rochelle was hugely Protestant. And then, of course, as I say, you have that whole Knights Templar side of things as well. And there is a museum that you can go to that gives you more information on the Knights Templar and how they used the harbour there. From what I've read, there were underground passages that led to their part of the port. I don't know much more about it than that because I've not been to that museum. But as I say, I do know that was a big stronghold of theirs, along with quite a few other places in the Charente, which I love. Just the thought of the Knights Templar stomping along. I have visions of my property here because we've got land and we've got an old wall that my French next door neighbour absolutely loves to tell stories. He can't help himself. And he's tried to persuade me that wall was built in the 12th century. So I'm going along with that. And so I have in my mind, when I'm sat on this wall, the idea of various different knights charging up on horses. And oh, my imagination just runs wild with me. But anyway, we are going slightly off point. So I'll bring us back again to Poitiers. So Poitiers is another place that's had a really big pivotal role in European history, especially during the Middle Ages. So there was a really big event in 700 and something AD. It was the Battle of Tours. And this is when they were invaded by Muslim forces. Poitiers has seen a lot of action in its time. And of course, it was the city where Eleanor of Aquitaine, who, as you could probably tell, got a bit of a girl crush on, thinks she's absolutely amazing. She essentially, we're told she was born there, but she had a palace there. So her and Richard the Lionheart spent a lot of time in Poitiers. And as you can imagine, I've been there several times. I've been around that particular palace, which is now the courts. It's no longer a palace. It was the Palace du Duc, but it's now the courts. And you can still see one of the big rooms that they used to use for all the feasts in Eleanor's time, which is fascinating to me. 12th century lady, lived till she was 80, unfortunately outlived several of her children. I think it was six. She had eight children. She outlived six of them. Very sad. But yeah, it's fascinating. It's a place that has a lot of not just history, but stories. And there's a staircase that is said to be the Devil's Staircase in Poitiers. And apparently the reason it's the Devil's Staircase is something to do with when they were trying to build this particular staircase, nothing would go right. And they believed that they were cursed by the devil. And there's all sorts of different stories that go around this, and somebody died when these stairs were being built, and now it's called the Devil's Staircase because the devil wasn't happy with their work, and that's why this person died. It was probably just fever. There was always some kind of illness during those days. But yeah, there's lots of lovely little stories like that. There's a wonderful restaurant, and I will have to send you the details of it, because this particular restaurant was built in an old abbey. So when you go in there, you can see how it would have felt when it was a church, and the arches and the ceilings. It's unbelievable. I've got a really good picture of it from when we ate there. But there's nothing like being a part of history and actually being able to eat in a restaurant that was a former abbey come church. So that was something that was really rather impressive. But Poitiers also, just down the road from Poitiers, is Futuroscope. And Futuroscope, I think, is the third largest theme park in France, but it's all digital. And it's if you like theme parks, you'll absolutely love that. I've done a couple of the rides there. I am not a roller coaster person, so I'm probably not the best person to tell you how wonderful they were. Screamed the whole way through, felt like I was going to puke when I came off. So if you like roller coasters, apparently it's very good. So my husband told me. But yeah, you'll see signs for Futuroscope all over the place. And another one that is a lot of fun right near Poitiers, which I'm happy to say didn't make me feel sick, was the Valley d'Assange, which is the Valley of the Monkeys. And this is 44 hectares of land where the monkeys roam free. And my mum was with me a couple of weeks ago, and monkeys are her favourite animals. So I had to take her because it's only a 50-minute drive from us. And it was absolutely unbelievable. There are something like 15 different species, and there are over 300 monkeys that roam on these 44 hectares of land, and they aren't shy. They love to come and say hello. They get up close and personal with you, and my favourites had to be the gorillas. There was this huge, big daddy gorilla, and the only thing I can describe his expression as was complete and absolute boredom. I don't think I've ever seen any animal be able to coin that expression better than this gorilla. You could just see he was sat there, he wasn't going to move, and he was absolutely bored, senseless by what was going on around him. And
now, was it
the others
a teenage gorilla? Because that would be a double whammy there.
That's what it felt like. And apparently he was the granddaddy, and he was, you know, the father of some of these other little gorillas running around. But it was absolutely magical seeing them. That goes all the way down to a lot of there's the mandrills and these little tiny monkeys who were jumping on prams, jumping on people's shoulders. It was a fabulous day. Not particularly expensive. I think it was 22 euros entry fee, and it never really felt that busy, even though we went, it was beginning of September, so it was still height of the season, really. But because of how big the place is, you never felt like there was too many people there. And not at one point did you feel like the animals were mistreated or not given the best possible lifestyle there. It was a lovely place to go. So that is just before you get to Poitiers, probably about 15 minutes before you get to Poitiers. So it's something to think about there. Now, if you're into things like monolithic churches, not easy for me to say, then somewhere else you should go is a little tiny village called Aubeterre-Soudron. So Aubeterre-Soudron, it has the wow factor. It's absolutely beautiful, but the whole place is built into this limestone cliff. The village sits on top and you walk down into the centre of the village. But what it's known for is the Église Saint-Jean. This particular church, as I say, is a monolithic church. And I can't remember how far back it goes now. But you go in and you are literally underground as you go in. But what really takes your breath away is how all those years ago, without scaffolding and all the various different things that we've got now, how the hell did they build this thing? It blows your mind. It's absolutely unbelievable. But the slightly creepy thing that they've got in there is there's an area where there's all bodies. Obviously, you can't see the bodies, but you can see the shape of the bodies. And there was about 250 bodies that were buried there. And they're not quite sure whose bodies they are. They just know that they go back 3-4 centuries. And this whole area, it's just shaped like bodies. It's really quite eerie, but fascinating at the same time. So if monolithic churches are your thing and you want to have a look at how they built this type of thing, it's absolutely stunning. And again, it's got very good audio to it that goes with it as well. So all of the different areas that you're walking around, you need to have a head for heights if you're going to go up to the top and look down, which I highly suggest you do, because you just get a fascinating view of exactly what it's all about. And right in the middle is said to be, or was, somewhere where part of the Virgin Mary's something or another was housed in this tomb. I think it was a bit of cloth. Yes, okay. Something like that. And it got destroyed during the wars of religion and what have you. But some people like to say that it was put back again. It was hidden during the wars of religion and then put back again. But whether we believe that or not is another matter entirely. But Aubeterre Soudron, absolutely beautiful. Oh, and it's classified as one of the prettiest villages in France. So they have this record of 150 villages in France, and it's called the Plus Beaux Villages or Villages sure. de France. And it is one of them, Aubeterre Soudron. I'm not quite sure how they go about giving these classifications, but it's obviously something that the village are very proud of. And when you go, you can absolutely understand why. That is somewhere else that I would suggest that you go. And the final place that I'm going to suggest you do on your whistlewind tour of the Charente, out of the big towns anyway, or slightly bigger towns, is somewhere called La Rochefoucauld. So this is actually only 20 minutes away from me. I went and did my grocery shopping there this morning, which I love because it has an amazing chateau that, again, sits on a hill and you can see it from miles around. You can be 5 kilometres away from La Rochefoucauld and you see the chateau sat there on the hill. And it blows your mind. It's absolutely stunning. Now, this chateau is actually open to the public, so you can go and look around. But the La Rochefoucauld family, they were very close to the royalty when France had a royal family. So it's a family that has been around for generations, and the family still own the property, but they also owned lots of other property throughout the Charente as well. They were about as high as you could get without actually being royal, big family. And during something else I found out quite recently when I was on one of their tours was he's literally recently died 4 or 5 years ago, but the Duke of La Rochefoucauld, he was involved with the resistance in World War II. And he got arrested not just once, but twice, and escaped both times. It's actually quite fascinating. I have an entire blog post dedicated to it because it really fascinated me, the resilience of this guy. Because quite easily, a lot of these bigger families could have rolled over and not played dead, but worked hand in glove with the Nazis, because this wasn't occupied territory during the war, our part of the Charente. And the Charente, not all of it was occupied. there was a division. But La Rochefoucauld was occupied, and he worked tirelessly as part of the resistance. And as I say, he was actually captured. And on the first one, he was on his way to be executed, jumped out the back of a van, hid in a convent, dressed as a nun, and then managed to get himself arrested again. Yeah, fascinating story, but very good family and an amazing place to look around. There's a spiral staircase in there that is said to have been designed by Michelangelo.
Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes, sorry, Leonardo da Vinci, thank you. Oh, how did you know that? Are you up there looking at this right now?
Yes, I am.
Oh, there you go.
I'm keeping up.
I'm impressed. Yeah.
Somebody has to do the show notes so that when people are sitting there going, how the hell do I spell
La Rochefoucauld,
that they can just go to the show notes and find it. Because
no, that's absolutely fine. But this staircase, trust me, it's worth seeing. But I think one of the things that fascinated me the most, other than the kitchen, which, by the way, was absolutely massive, and it still looks very similar to what it did back in the day. We're talking one of those kitchens where huge, great big fireplaces, they had massive copper pots on the wall. And it just gave you an insight into what it must have been like in the 12th, 13th century when, you know, with the walls of these castles, these buildings in France are beyond thick. you're not talking little peely-wally houses that they build nowadays. We're talking about walls that it's difficult to get through. They're absolutely massive. And so you can imagine how cold it was down there. You can imagine how hard it would have been on the feet to be walking on these paving stones and what have you. But they also have the most amazing library. I can't remember how many books there were, but there were a lot. And again, you can take a guided tour. In English, they take you through 20-odd rooms. Well worth doing. When we went, we had some Australian friends of ours over. And obviously Australia doesn't have a huge history behind it. So they were fascinated in seeing the Chateau of La Rochefoucauld. So they said, all right, we'll take you. So we went, and the Duchess herself was at home. Now, Martin decided that he was going to go and say hello to the Duchess. He walked up to her, grabbed her hand, kissed it, and said, Duchess, it is so lovely to see you again. The look on her face. I haven't been back since. I was too embarrassed. I did not want to be seen at La Rochefoucauld again after Martin decided to go and kiss the hand of the Duchess. But she was absolutely lovely. She was very charming, and she was quite nice to Martin, considering she'd been taken by surprise. But it's a great place to go. Now, the actual village is really good too, and there is an amazing restaurant called Chez Steph. They do the best steak I have ever had in my life. But here's the but. This is something I love about the French. The customer is not always right in France.
Sure.
So we went in there. My husband, he's better now. This was about 6 years ago, 7 years ago when we first moved over here. He used to like all of his food nuked. So I mean, we're talking
sure.
charcoal,
very,
burnt.
Very well yeah. done, yeah. Not something one does in France.
No. So he, as we sat down, he
asked
for it.
To the chef.
Yep. He asked for it to be well done. And the waiter just looked at him and went, no. And that was it. We were so taken aback. And it was like, we're so used to English and Americans where customer's always right. You get what you want. No, not in France. It was just a no. The chef doesn't do well done. You will have medium. And like, looked at Richard. He looked at me and went, okay. But I have to say, it is the best steak I've ever had. We've been back many times since, and he's never, ever made that mistake again. But I can highly recommend it. And it is just at the foot of the chateau. And there's also a really good chocolate shop there as well. So if you're into chocolate, these guys make all their own chocolate on site. So that's worth having a look at too. And from La Rochefoucauld, which is 20 minutes one way from where I live, 20 minutes another way is another absolutely stunning little village called Verteuil. And Verteuil has one of those fairy tale chateaus that, again, you can see it from miles away as you're coming because it just rises up into the distance in front of you. And it's got these Rapunzel-esque type conical towers. So it looks like something out of a fairy tale. As soon as you see it, you feel like you've stepped into the pages of a fairy tale book. It's just unbelievable. And you can see people as they're walking through the village. They just don't know where to look because everywhere you look, it's stunning. It's on the Charente River and you've got the castle. You've also got an old mill there as well. And up until 2 weeks ago, because they've literally just sold it, the mill used to be open for you to be able to go in and have something to eat. But it was a working mill. And so you could see what was going on and the turning and all the rest of it. So that was quite fascinating. You can still walk along there. You just can't eat there anymore. But if you do go to Verteuil, I can highly recommend a restaurant called Jeu de Pau. Jeu de Pau, beautiful food. Again, slightly on the pricey side, but very good. And it's the quaintest, cutest, just odd place that I've ever been. Nothing matches, but it's one of those places that once you've been, you just want to keep going back. And the lady who runs it is absolutely lovely, speaks no English at all, but you always seem to be able to make yourself understood. And it's just one of the most welcoming, lovely, beautifully designed places without meaning to be designed. So I would highly recommend a little trip to Verteuil.
And the translation here, Jeu de Pau, so pot joy, or joy of pots, is that where does that come from? Is that something to do with the cuisine here?
No, I don't think so. I actually don't know why it's called Jeu de Pau.
Okay. I didn't know if they were well known for some particular pot-based
dish or something. No, because the menu changes quite regularly. Hmm. One thing I will say to you is if you get a chance, you want to go with a plat de jour. And I don't just mean in jeu de pot, I mean in general. Because a plat de jour is such good value. More often than not, a plat de jour will be about €15 and you will get a starter, a main course, and a dessert. You have absolutely no choice as to what you're going to get. But it's the best way to try French food because you don't know what you're going to get. But it's always really delicious. And it's such good value. And sometimes they'll even throw in a glass of wine for that €15 as well. Mm-hmm. Plat de jour, generally only served at lunchtime, often only Monday to Thursday. Sometimes they don't do it on a weekend because obviously they know they're going to be busy anyway.
So and you do have choice. It's the plate of the day. So you could always come back tomorrow if you don't like what they have today.
Exactly.
But that is your only choice. Yeah.
It is. And you know what? It's just such a great way to try French food, mm-hmm. especially mm-hmm. with a husband like mine who, meat and two veg guy, is not particularly adventurous. He's got a lot more adventurous now, although we both have drawn the line at snails. I still can't bring myself to do that. I always chuckle to myself whenever I go down the frozen aisle section. Right there, along with the fish fingers, is the escargot. And it still makes me chuckle seeing it in the frozen section. And they also have very specific types of snails here. And my French teacher will completely pull me apart if she listens to this episode and hears me try and actually pronounce the name of these snails. But they are called caguilles, as far as I know. So it's C-A-G-O-U-I-L-E-S. And they are common garden snails. But you can find them in jars in the supermarket. And you quite often see French people, when it's been raining, going out and foraging for snails. Totally disgusting, as far as I'm concerned. But my next-door neighbour, Stefan, swears by just a little bit of butter with some garlic and some parsley. But he says that about everything, so I've given up on that whole side of things. Everything is perfect with a bit of garlic and butter as far as he's concerned. So, yes.
I'm with him on that, but I do also draw the line as well. My wife loves them, but yeah.
Oh, really? She's tried them?
Oh, sure.
Oh, brave lady. No, I haven't done that yet. I did do oysters at Christmas, which I also think are totally disgusting. It just felt like drinking a load of seawater. My husband plays walking football here. And before you ask, walking football is a thing for the over 50s. It's a very English thing to do, but the French are really into it now as well. And we had to go to their Christmas dinner. And of course, being the only two English people at this Christmas dinner, all eyes were on us, and I made the fatal mistake of, when they said to me, have you had oysters before, saying no. I should have just said yes and lied, because then everybody was watching me with these oysters, and there were five of them. I'm thinking, oh my God, I'm just going to have to take one for the team and do this. I can't be rude. So I did. I ate them. But my husband, who also had five oysters given to him, just wasn't satisfied with saying, I've done my bit, that's it. When they came around and said, would you like some more? I said no. He said, oh, okay then. And I said, what are you doing? Why would you do that? Because neither of us liked them. So there he was. He had 10. I had 5. But there you go. I can at least say I have now tried the oysters in the Charente, but I won't be trying them again in a hurry. Snails, oysters, two very big things here. But something else that's really big here as well is goat's cheese. And have you ever had goat's cheese?
Oh, sure.
I hadn't until I came here. I mean, I love French cheese. Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you? There's a lot of great French cheese here. But we actually, in the Charente, we're famous for goat's cheese. There was a war, and I can't remember when it was. It'll be in the show notes. And apparently when the war was over and these people went back into Spain, they left us with some goats. And since then, we've been famous for goat's cheese. So you will find a lot of goat's cheese in the Charente. And in fact, I think we are responsible for 2/3 of the goat's cheese produced in France. There you go. Little tidbit that you didn't know before.
Actually, so the war was the one that you already referred to. It was the victory of Charles Martel over the Saracens at Poitiers. So it there was the victory over the invading Moors.
Thanks to the Moors, we now have a lot of goat's cheese.
Interesting.
There you go. Okay. It is. But one thing I do have to tell you about, which is particularly good and not everybody has heard of, because they always think about cognac. Cognac is obviously the big drink of the region.
Sure.
But cognac isn't the only drink. Pinot de Charente is absolutely beautiful. Last week, I was out in the vines. I was invited to a local cognac distillery to take part in their vendange. And a vendange is basically a festival of the grapes. So it's a harvesting thing.
Okay.
And we were all out in the fields. There was about 45 of us. And we were hand-picking the grapes, which was a lot of fun. We got to see how they were going to be fermented, what was going to happen mm-hmm. to them, etc. I had a moment of I Love Lucy. Do you remember when she did the grape stomping?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, oh, yes. I had one of those moments when I saw the big...
We both dated huge... ourselves there, but okay.
Yeah, I know. Right? Yeah, so for those that don't know I Love Lucy, never mind. Go look it up, YouTube it. It was very entertaining. But afterwards, we all got to take home a bottle of Pinot de Charente. So Pinot is made with grape juice and eau de vie. So eau de vie is like the young cognac. And it's aged for a minimum of about a year. And the closest thing I can think of to describe it is either port or sherry. Okay. Now, I love a good
port. So it's a fortified wine.
It is a fortified wine.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and it's absolutely beautiful. But my favorite one, because obviously port is a dark red, but my favorite Pinot is a rosé. And the white one is very nice as well. So naturally, you have it chilled, which you wouldn't do with port. Or sherry, for that matter. But it's absolutely beautiful with goat's cheese. There you go.
Okay.
One to try if you ever decide to enjoy some apéros. So apéros, big thing here in France. It's short for apéritif, but apéro mm-hmm. hour can begin anywhere from 4 o'clock in the afternoon and run all the way up till about 8 o'clock at night, dependent upon where you are and who you're with. My French neighbour Anne likes to start early, but it's a lot of fun and it's a hugely French thing. And everybody's idea of apéros is different, but usually it will be some form of alcoholic drink along with some nibbles. So think charcuterie board, some cheese, mm-hmm. maybe little bits of bread with pate, that type of thing. But it's like a precursor to your meal. So it's to stimulate the appetite was what it was about.
Sounds like what
originally.
We did last night in the backyard at Friday night happy hour. So
yeah, there you go. You had a French apéro. It's absolutely great. And you have
Except
to do one
the
of
pate.
These. The pate, the cheese, and then, of course, the Pinot as well. So
excellent.
There you go. That should have given you a little bit of a feel for what the Charente is like, why I would suggest you come here. And that's just the tip of the iceberg, really, because all I've spoken about, yes, I gave you a couple of the smaller villages like Vertoy and Aubertin-sur-Dron, mm-hmm. but mainly the bigger places. And that's where the guidebooks really let you down a bit, because mm-hmm. they don't tend to mention all these beautiful little villages. So I always joke that in England, there's a pub on every corner. In the Charente, there's a chateau on every corner. And so you don't want to miss those. They're mm-hmm. absolutely stunning. And all of them have got a story to tell. And they all allow you to just take this fascinating step back into history. And you can start to imagine what life would have been like then, because most of these villages, like I said at the start, haven't changed. It is like being in a time warp. You feel like you've taken a step back in history. You've taken this step back into a giant leap back in time, because these villages are seriously stunning. They're absolutely beautiful. But you would be forgiven in thinking that they were deserted, because the French, you can always tell French houses versus anybody that's English living there, because the French have their shutters closed all the time. In the winter, they have their shutters closed to keep the cold out. In the summer, they have their shutters closed to keep the sun out, because it's, you know, hot here. It gets up to 38, 40 degrees sometimes. So it's hot. We actually have about approximately a year, 2,500, I think, or 2,400 hours of sunshine a year. Own little microclimate. We're up there with the south of France. So it really has everything you could possibly want. But as I say, the guidebooks like to focus on the bigger towns, which is normal because that's what a lot of people want to see because it's what they've heard of. But if you take some time out, you've got these other little places like Luxeuil and Tucson and Nantes and Marle and Ruffec, by the way, was apparently named after a Roman centurion soldier who had red hair. That's why it was called Ruffec. These little things you find out when you're doing your research is unbelievable. There you go. That, in a nutshell, is the Charente.
Excellent. Before we get to some of our wrap-up questions, anything else that people should know before they head to the Charente?
Yeah, there's a few things you should really know. The first thing I would say to you is you have to remember that when you come to the Charente, you're coming to rural France, hence the name of my website, which means things don't work in the same way as they do in the big cities. Namely, shops don't open on a Sunday. Shops close for lunch every day of the week for 2 hours. You could be thinking that you're about to go into a shop and buy a lovely dress or whatever, and you won't between midday and two. Because the French, as far as lunch is concerned, it's sacred. They take 2 hours for lunch. How they ever come back again when they've had a glass of wine for lunch for 2 hours, God only knows. But let's put it this way. You don't trust any workmen to do any good work after lunch. You get them to do all the precision stuff beforehand. So that's the first thing I would say. The second thing is if you're going out to eat, yeah, again, the French are quite strict when it comes to food time. You get to eat at a restaurant at lunchtime between 12 and 2. In the evening, it's between 7 and 9. This is the rural way. You will not be able to rock up at, say, 5 to 2 and expect to get seated. Oh, no, they're wrapping up by that time. It wouldn't matter if there was a queue going out the door. They'd still say no. So that's just something to bear in mind. When you come to the rural areas, you need to just plan around that. But, hey, that is what French life is all about. Everything is very slow. Everything is taking a step back. We almost live in a different era here. So that's the first thing I would say. Second thing I would say is don't think you're going to get your phone out, pull up Uber and get an Uber, because you're not. Uber doesn't exist here in the Charente. There is no Uber. You can get Uber in Bordeaux, but you can't get Uber in most parts of the Charente. It's also actually quite hard to get a taxi or a cab, full stop. So one thing I would recommend is hiring a car. Rent a car, much easier. It allows you to be able to get around really well. Even me, living here, if I'm going to go to Bordeaux, I drive to Angoulême, park and take the train into Bordeaux. I don't want the hassle of trying to find somewhere to park. It's just easier. But I would still have a car to go around all of the small villages. It will make your life a little bit easier. So that's just a few things to take into consideration when you're coming to rural France. Oh, the other thing I would say, just really quickly, is make sure when you walk into anywhere, you start off with bonjour.
Bonjour.
It will get you a very long way. It is actually considered
otherwise, you
rude.
Haven't said the password and you won't get service in the fashion that you're expecting.
Yep. I couldn't have said it better myself. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's interesting knowing that and not knowing that, just the difference, because otherwise people think you're very rude and you walk away thinking they're very rude because they didn't give you service. You didn't follow the protocol.
Absolutely. Excellent. And that is just one thing that is worth taking into consideration. Oh, and one final thing, the French absolutely love line dancing. It is quite normal to walk through a village and in the middle of the afternoon see line dancing demonstrations. If you go to an event like the night markets, which by the way are huge in this area in the summer, not in the winter months, but in the summer, they do some at Christmas, but generally in the summer, the night markets are massive and there'll often be a line dancing display. There is nothing better than just getting up and having a go. In fact, in order to try and improve my French, I joined a line dancing group, which is all in French. I've never done line dancing before in my life. My French is not that good. So you can just imagine what it's like for me every Wednesday night, going to line dancing for 2 hours in a language I don't understand, doing a dance I can't do. But it's a lot of fun and it really throws you into the French way of life. So that's something to look out for. And if you like a bit of line dancing, you'll love the Charente.
Excellent. As we go to wrap this up, you are standing in the prettiest spot in the Charente. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
Oh, you are absolutely in one of the fields right near Cognac in a little place called Jarnac, and you are surrounded by sunflowers. Jarnac is, it's absolutely stunning. I think for me, that's probably the prettiest place. And as I say, it's just outside of Cognac. Beautiful little village worth going to have a look at.
Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in the Charente.
Only in the Charente. Oh my goodness. Probably it would be the line dancing. They just literally will dance anywhere. It's that. And when you go to a supermarket in the Charente, you can't be in a hurry. because every single little old lady in France will stand there and have a conversation with the checkout girl. And it doesn't matter if there's queue 10 people long. They are there and they're going to have their chat, and that chat is not going to be hurried along for anybody. No amount of foot tapping or huffing or puffing or clicking or anything else is going to make her go any faster. It is a Chavant thing. Everybody talks to everybody and they are not going to be hurried. So that, it used to drive me insane when I first moved over here, but I think now, yeah, I like it. I think it's just a nice way to not be in a hurry with life. And just, it's the jeu de vivre, I think is probably the best way of putting it.
Excellent. And if you had to summarize the region in just three words, what three words would you use?
Ooh, cognac.
Okay.
Yeah, cognac, Pinot, line dancing. Oh, can I add one in? Sunflowers, yes, as well. I'd have to put sunflowers in there because it is what we're known for.
Excellent. Our guest again has been Kylie Lang from lifeinruralfrance.com. And Kylie, if we wanted to send people to your best post on the Charente in your website, where are we going to send them to?
Things to do in the Charente, France. There is a blog post dedicated to this episode, and everything that I've talked about you will find in there. You'll find links, etc. Yep, that's where to find me. And if you're not sure where you want to go in the southwest of France, I also have a little quiz you can take that will tell you the area and the region best suited to you and your tastes. So you can find that, literally it's all over the website, the quiz. So yeah, you'll find buttons for that popping up all over the place, but I can give you a link to take you directly to it, so you can find out which region.
I will put a link in the show notes to that
for you.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Kylie, for sharing with us your obvious love for rural France and for the Charente in particular.
You're welcome. Thank you so much for having me.
A special thanks to the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially, and especially Archun, who is the latest patron of Amateur Traveler. Thanks so much. If you're interested in learning more about becoming a patron of the show, go to patreon.com/amateur traveler. Next week will be a repeat episode. I'm not sure what it will be. It might be an episode on Malta, because that's where I will be taking a week off, one of the 4 weeks off I give myself a year. But then we've got some great shows coming up on Papua New Guinea, Central Australia, and Sonoma County, California. So make sure you subscribe to Amateur Traveler so you don't miss out. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have any questions, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.
It's lunchtime at Tim Hortons, and we're serving up a special deal just for you. Our new $5.99 lunch deal includes your choice of any lunch sandwich and a side of crunchy kettle chips. Because what's lunch without a little crunch? And the sandwich choice is all yours. Like a ham and Swiss, Chipotle chicken wrap, BLT, and more. Made to order just the way you like it. Tim Hortons' new lunch deal. Simple, delicious, and just $5.99. Now that's a good deal. Only at your neighborhood Tim's. U.S. only. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.